WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
Welcome back to the second half of Afternoons with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. All right, the chief is here. Before we get to Broad River, we gotta get to downtown. Last Saturday, and when we talked to people on the program Monday about evaluating Expo, nobody said anything. The good news is nobody called up and said anything negative about the men and women of law enforcement. When the only concern was, it's just so many, it's like an armed camp. But having been down on that corner for many years, when I walked up to the corner at 8:30, it looked like your officers were like the brothers standing on the corner in the neighborhood, just standing around talking among themselves.
Amos, thank you for that. I think you saw IMPD at its best in the sense that they're ambassadors first. Mm-hmm. They're oftentimes police are the first persons people come to town to see, and they were in a relaxed posture. And as we talked about, by design, the discussion's been since I've been here, and then 4 years ago, we talked about how we want to be more engaging, want to reach out to the people who are spending money in our town, who come downtown to get the chance to meet us when nothing's going wrong. Why not engage them in conversation? But it's also sir and ma'am, respectfully, until such time as they decide it's no longer sir and ma'am. So being respectful, being engaging is what most of our officers do on a daily basis. But Expo is really a time to showcase, and I talked about the legacy of 44 years, mm-hmm. 44 years of legacy in terms of African-American community. And we have bragging rights here in Indy. We're one of the few cities in the country able to pull off something like this and continue to do it year after year after year. Now, I hate to say this, but sometimes it appears our media partners seem a little bit disappointed. We hate to disappoint them again for the fourth year. We have not had a shooting or any challenges in 4 years. So, yeah, we look forward to showcasing and hosting this because it is the largest single event of its type in the country on a weekend like such as this.
And it was a couple of arrests. And one of them was one of your officers spotted somebody that he'd seen the picture at the roll call that was wanted by South Bend, St. Joe County for a shooting. He spotted him, got some of the guys to help him. They apprehended this gentleman who was packing a weapon. That's great police work.
It was. We had excellent roll calls. We had the commander, the deputy chief at the time, Bates, and outstanding work with Executive Officer Freeze and explaining how important it is to be vigilant, pay attention, and protect people. One of those things is looking at a warning poster that came out of South Bend for a homicide suspect who at that time had dreads. Mm-hmm. And they had a picture of him wearing dreads, and they had a picture of him being when he's been recently shaved, or hair was recently cut.
Right.
Well, as good as they are, they've had the opportunity to scan the crowd and speaking to people and look and spotted a gentleman that fit the description. He happened to walk across the street.
Mm.
And lo and behold, it happened to be him. Now, of course, he's walking dirty. He had a pistol in his pocket, which shows how important it is to have police be vigilant in those areas paying attention.
How important that kind of police work to the morale of your department that's been through some tough days the last few weeks?
Isn't it amazing how you can go through all the challenges we've gone through in the last year, and we've lost two fine officers less than 10 months. We've gone through several internal problems and challenges and dealing with all the discussions about staffing and all that goes on. But they still, as resilient as they are, go out there every day with the mindset we're willing to take on the threat. We get out of the cars. We stand on the corners. We get in the community. We approach people who are armed subjects, and we take them down to make our city safe at our own peril and willing to die for the city and how important it is to live up to the oath we've taken.
You have talked on this program several times about the fact that law enforcement is monitoring public social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Those are public sites, and anything somebody puts on, you know, those three social media things, anybody can see, not just law enforcement. You don't need a warrant. That is just open for public view. That you all are monitoring those, particularly spotting people that might be doing a party in their house and charging $10, which means they don't have a permit. There could be a problem in a neighborhood.
From IMPD as much as it is other sources, but I would say this, majority of our information comes from a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. We get tips from sources all over the city. But one of the largest tips come from the community, whether it be tipping us off about a party at a hotel, underage kids. And by the way, I want to thank the parents who have changed the mindset about allowing the children to come downtown and renting them hotel rooms on the weekends during Expo. That's been tremendous in terms of the number of cases that we haven't had, the reduction number of arrests right. in cases. But also the fact that the information we receive from parents about cases of children who are going attending parties, whether it be underage parties, illegal parties, impromptu parties, a variety of sources of information shared by us. We don't give away a lot of our trade secrets, Amos, but I will say this, that if we don't have community seeing something, we can't be effective.
239-1310 afternoon's name has got a text message at 37890 keyword Amos. How many times has this type of incident? I think we're talking about the incident on July the evening of July 4th, going into July 5th. How many times this incident has occurred in Broad Ripple? I understand this incident was a sad one, but it's no different than when adults, black and white, all act the same. Alcohol has no color or race, neither does money. They should consider that when thinking of isolating one race. And there have been problems of rapes and men getting robbed in Broad Ripple. This seems, I think, the larger violent thing is an isolated incident and should be treated as such. I tried to look at the incidents in Broad Ripple the whole year, and I mm-hmm. guess the switching of computer systems mm-hmm. has caused me not to look at the whole thing. So I guess I had like 3 months, May, June, most of July, some of August, about 153 incidents, but not a lot of incidents against persons or offenses against sensibility or something like that. How violent is Broad Ripple?
Well, I think it's important to note that Broad Ripple has been historically a hamlet of sorts, and as I often you've heard me say that between the hours of 9 and 10 o'clock at night, it is that family-oriented hamlet-type community, bedroom mm-hmm. community, where people oftentimes pretty much over the years, been there 40 years, 50 years, lived there, walked to and from the restaurants and the bars, et cetera, to one where we have to recognize it has shifted with the relevant times being where they are, where college students and others have gathered in the evening hours for obviously entertainment purposes. Now, what happens in terms of like securing those neighborhoods becomes a matter of discussion between the residents and the police. For example, what type of lighting do we have? Well, we don't want to change the lighting as much. Well, let's talk about parking. Mm-hmm. Well, we really don't want to park in the neighborhood, so we build a garage.
Right.
Do we need cameras on the garage? Yes, we do. Do we have a well-lit garage? Yes. Do we need to use it? Absolutely. But does that take away from the businesses in the community? Some think that it does. So they have a different thought process as to whether or not we want to operate with the understanding of keeping it the way it used to be or moving to where it is now. But the question for us in law enforcement is short-term and long-term thinking. What do we want to see today in terms of safety versus long-term, and what are we willing to actually put in terms of rules and regulations as to how we're going to govern that new prospect? I see it downtown. We did the same thing downtown. We've had conversation about what do we want the mall to be mm-hmm. after 6? And remember my conversation about
right.
that. What does the mall look like after 6 o'clock? What does Castleton look like after a certain hour? What do we want to do in terms of civility and making sure people come in peace? And what should the rules be? Well, we struck a happy meeting with the community in the mall. We did the same thing with the downtown along Meridian Street. And when it comes down to businesses, we fully understand where they stand in terms of enforcement of their rules. They understand where we are with the spirit of the law and the letter of the law.
Mm-hmm.
We operate with both.
Is the problem in Broad Ripple people who are just walking up and down Broad Ripple Avenue that legally cannot go into the bars because, say, they're 18 to 21? Is the problem just that the crowd suddenly starts coming at 10 and overcrowds the sidewalk, which is why the mm-hmm. decision to close Broad Ripple Avenue on Friday and Saturday nights between midnight and bar closing
sure.
time? What have your top commanders said when they've gone out there at bar time? And if you've gone out there, what have your eyes?
Bringing a fresh set of eyes in a lot of ways is good. Amos, I come from an environment where I knew some of the history based on what I read, but I'm also as I'm looking at Nuvo as a good example. We have Nuvo, a magazine that talks about entertainment and what happens in the community.
And they got some racist stuff in
there. They have some stuff in here that's very unique. But what I found in looking at this, using this as an example, we have the old nostalgia version of things that used to be and how they, in some cases, still are. Then we have a new wave of thinking. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what's relevant today? We have, if one side of the street is kind of like nostalgic in terms of its mindset, right, particularly in a 9 to 9, I talk crowd, right, and it changes to the more relevant, more fast-paced, in some case, hip-hop, more new-school kind of thinking, the two often clash. And mm-hmm. what we have is right now is a little bit of the old versus the new.
Mm.
And we have to be clear that there's some old vestiges of the past that need to stay in the past. We can't bring it forward and make change happen without having some real conversation with the community.
All right, 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon. His name is the chief is here. I'm going to kind of move everybody along so we can, so the chief can talk to as many as possible. Let me start with Poetic Me at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, sir?
Fine.
I can kind of been just listening throughout the whole segment of this issue with Broad Ripple, and I've heard a lot of people's comments and those who called, and even police chiefs just talking now. I think the issue is that there has to be a situation with putting things in perspective. From a business perspective, if there's people, regardless of, we got to understand classes of people. So it's and separate this race thing, because it seemed like whenever something blows up, they always isolate African-American community. Again, there were some other ones that mentioned, I think, on the same note. And you have classes of grungies, hippies, you know, nostalgics, whatever, that all hang out at Broad Ripple. All hang out at Broad Ripple. And there's been many times that I've been to Broad Ripple, even on the nights when the clubs is going on. And all the clubs, for whatever it caters to, whoever it caters to, I'm talking about lines that are wrapped from right on Broad Ripple all the way around college. And so one aspect, it's unfair to isolate a group of people because of an isolated incident where there's been many issues that have been going on at Broad Ripple for years as far as violence concerned. And date all that back in the early 90s at the actual high school. So, I mean, there's nothing brand new about the crime going on in Broad Ripple. However, from a business perspective, is if I'm a patron, one, and I'm coming to whatever particular place to spend my money and enjoy where I'm at, then I would want to do that without having to deal with any type of riffraff. And I don't care what race they are, because there's an area that I work at on the south side. And so the guy that mentioned about all these blacks out here sagging their pants, and all of us are not doing that, wherever he got that information from. But there's plenty of Caucasians that I've encountered on the south side that's predominantly white that do just the same thing, if not to a greater degree. They ride around with rims on their cars. They bang gangster music, you know what I mean, and have the hats cocked to the side, and I see it every weekend. And so you can't associate those type of things. A sagging pants is not a black thing. It's an urban thing. It's a class of people. And so one thing they have to get right is differentiating what classes are in the area and then deal with what's prevalent, and that's the crime, not so much as a class of people.
Great comments, my brother. I appreciate it. Let me go to Edna right quick, and let the chief respond to both at 239-1310.
Yeah. Hi, Edna. Hello, Amos.
Yes, ma'am.
I've been going to Broad Ripple family for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know the crime pier down in Broad Ripple. It's mostly family-oriented, neighbors going out, they've taken their children out. It's a family affair. When you go to Broad Ripple, there's a fire station there that had my grandsons and showed them the fire trucks and equipment and where they sleep. It was a very educational feel around that fire station and the jewelry stores. The food was good. The people waited on us just really like we were special. And I have nothing bad to say about Broad Ripple because I conduct my character where it mixed in with their character.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right is right and wrong is wrong. The guy that shot down through those people, he should not have been there with that gun. Now, that may be the only incident because when that woman lost her son one night in Broad Ripple, I prayed for that woman looking for her son, and he come up dead. He was white.
Mm.
Anybody that has trouble, you have a heart to pray and feel for those people's loved ones. And I'm saying this, if they come down with the attitude they're going to cause trouble, then they need to stay out of Broad Ripple. But look around the clientele that is around there. If you blend in with a good, not rowdy way about you, you're accepted with anything. Just act like you're supposed to where you're at. You're not on a football field. You're not on a baseball field. Don't go in there acting like that. So that's the comment I got for
all
the
right,
day.
All right, let me let the chief respond.
Okay.
Me and Ed.
I think I couldn't disagree with anything anyone said. I think the whole idea is back to my premise of nostalgia versus hip-hop, of nostalgia versus new wave. We have to recognize there's two mindsets. We have a historic value in terms of what people believe, in terms of Broad Ripple and the nostalgia, but we also have a new wave of young people coming in who are somewhat highly educated, and their pants may be sagging, and they may like hip-hop music, but they don't come there with violence. Mm-hmm. The one we're asking for, we're asking people to understand, number one, is it's not our job just to police to talk to African-American community. We make that very clear.
That ain't your job.
Just to talk to black folk, we talk to everybody, black, Latino, Asian, you name it. Our job is to treat this as one city. Now, a reality of it, yeah, there's some vestiges of the past, and people just got to get over and understand that the times are changing. To see interracial couples walking down the street in Broad Ripple is kind of like it says that times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that people can come to Broad Ripple of color, have a good time and go home in peace, it's mandatory. Regardless of who you are, you should be able to walk anywhere in our city and feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
We resent anybody having had a number of officers shot and killed,
mm-hmm.
and having a number of officers been involved in police action shootings and protecting this city. I dare anyone who would say that we, as police and the community, will allow anyone to walk in any of our places, whether it be Suite 38 or any place in Landshark or any other club in our community, and allow them to wreak havoc. We will not allow it to happen. But having said that, what are we willing to do? This is a great opportunity to open up dialogue. We're sorry the information got out a little faster than we wanted to on Fox 59 because that's not the way we want to present information to change when we're meeting with the owners of businesses and community. It got out before we were ready for it. But I will say this. We're happy to have the discussion. We've had community conversations. We've done impacts reporting out to you. We'll continue to do it as a police department. But let's be clear. The value statement of our society, in particular Broad Ripple, has to be determined as to what it is. Is it an entertainment district after 10 o'clock? Is it a nightclub environment that we're now creating for the next 3 to 5 years? What will the community residents say? What will the other businesses say? What do say you is Broad Ripple today? Not, we know what it is between 9 and 5. On 9 and 9, but what is it after 10 o'clock? Because that seems to be the debate. But either way, violence is not acceptable anywhere.
Whether it's before 10 o'clock or after 10 o'clock. Let me go to Brother Kareem, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
We're fine. What's up?
You know, this is heavy on my heart because I asked for the grassroots meeting with the police chief and the prosecutor on these issues because a lot of our issues and concerns are not being addressed. And we still need that to happen. And for the Broad Ripple, I remember a whole lot of things being in this city since 1975 up to now that deal with racial disharmony and whatnot. So we need to know who's behind these things. They're trying to say they really don't want black folks out there. The same spirit, Brother Chief of Police, downtown has the same spirit. They're not saying it straight up, but when you go downtown and you look and you can see the hostility sometimes to some of those businesses about the young blacks, whether they acting right or they're not acting right. Matter of fact, they still don't want us to come down there and have bus stops right around where they need to have bus stops around at the theater and whatnot. so that when they come out of that place, they can get right on that bus right there and go on home. The other thing I'm concerned with, Brother Chief of Police, is that there is a lack of communication in the mainstream black community with the youth. Over here at Watkins Park, Douglas Park, Washington Park, I believe and understand that there should be some kind of open forum to talk to the youth there, the youth with their parents. Because the leadership that we've had, Brother Chief of Police, is that on the norm, they have these big rallies and stuff, but it don't trickle down to the people that it need to trickle down to. So since you are critiquing these different areas that you are critiquing, I suggest strongly, strongly that you and the chief of, and the prosecutor call us grassroots people into meetings without the mainstream leaders that's been out here, because really, if they're not doing anything, they're not doing anything. And these kids want a place to go. I don't know if you remember, Amos, they used to be able to go in the summertime and pick corn. You know,
Get
them little summer jobs, all them little things. Look at what's going on now. What are these leaders doing for them now? So if they want to put it on the police department, they can't. But at the same time, we got civic leaders and political leaders and church leaders that have money that can put back in the community and make things happen, so the chief of police and the police officers don't have this problem, because these kids are hungry. They want to wear nice clothes. They want to look clean when they go to school, and things happen.
All right. I appreciate that. Anytime we got Brother Kareem calling you, Brother Chief, there's some progress there.
There's progress.
Have there been some discussions like Kareem talked about?
Let me say something to you. I kind of have to laugh, because I spend every other weekend in Watkins Park talking to 1,500 people. We put in extra people to make sure it's safe. We encourage it. Douglas Park, we have attended at least two or three different reunions. I walk among the people. I don't sleep much. I don't have much of a social life, so I spend all my time in the community. I find it appalling that we have to have a meeting to discuss our issues and challenges in our community. We had 125 homicide last year. We had a march with Tavon Martin where 3,000 people showed up. The same people that knew about Tavon Martin knew about the 125 people that were killed last year. Where is it? It's such an urgency. It starts with everyone. We've had prayer vigils on steps of churches. We had prayer vigils in the community. We had them on the veterans at the American Legion Mall. We had a successful expo. I don't know what it takes to get people to understand the people going to save us are us. Mm. And we got to stop looking to everybody else to do what we can do in our own neighborhoods. We just had a march that started at 25th near Dearborn.
With the circus, yeah.
With the circus. It started with 20 people, 25, 30 people. It grew to maybe, and we finally had to step off. It's about 100 people. As we march, people join. When we finished, Amos, it was about 300 to 400 people in the parade, in the park, celebrating the life of Mother Morrow and those on Dearborn. People have to get involved, and they're starting to. Mm-hmm. But I don't want us to look at other whole folk that have to save us when we're going to have to save ourselves, because these are our children. These are our families. I am the first person would say, and I'll say it again on these airways, we would support any mission to bring young people together. Dr. Hampton brought 600 of them together, did a lock-in at his church. He had another 300 to try to get in and couldn't. We need to find venues for them, and we'll help protect it. But you got to come with the right frame of mind and peace. Young people, yeah, they have more than we had, but we're not utilizing the benefit of those places now like we used to. We have to come in peace if we're going to have a place for them to go.
239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is We'll Take a Break. Chief is here. Everybody want to talk? This is a subject everybody's interested in. Next week, we may have some conversations on, do we need, I ain't going to ask him that because I ain't going to get him in trouble. Do we need more police on the street, or do we stand pat with what we got?
More police in our neighborhoods and our families.
We'll have
the household.
That conversation is next week, because I'm not going to ask the chief that, because I don't want, because I just, you know, his boss, his big boss said one thing, he and the public safety director said another. I ain't going to get him in the middle of that. I'm not going to get nobody in trouble. This week, it's on that issue. It's After News with Amos After News.
Hello, this is King Ro Conley, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
But on the issue of how do we pay for police, are we at a point where, as part of Chief, this discussion on how many officers we need to have, how we do that, that we've got to also, everything should be on the table in terms of discussion, maybe not discussion of take home cars, discussion of, you know, how much your officers work for you, how much they work part time, because when Rick Snyder of the FOP was here, he made a very passionate case for how the stress that his members, your employees, are going through out on the streets, similar to, he used the word combat. I wouldn't necessarily use that noun, but I understood where he was coming from. It was not combat from a militaristic standpoint. It was just the overwork, the stress. And are we at a point where we need to be looking at all this? Because if the part-time job is causing officers to be tired and not be 110% for you, and the citizens, then that's something to look at. Maybe the sheriff can protect all these walk and runs and do these other things. Are these the type of things that would need to be on the table as a serious discussion?
They're all on the table, Amos, and I think the professionalism that has been exhibited from IMPD over the years has caused people to think about utilizing services of police for private businesses and for added reasons. I've never seen a police department where the expectations are so high. And be honest with you, the return of the investment is kind of low. What I mean by that is we need the business community and everyone recognize how much IMPD has given back as ambassadors to the city to making it safe where you can do conventions and things of that nature. Now, if you enjoy that, then it comes at a price. The other part of it that I think is important to note at IMPD is that they stay extremely long. They stay a long time in law enforcement. So you have a wealth of knowledge, of institutional knowledge in the department. But when it leaves or it prepares to leave, like now, we have to replace them with brand new recruits. Now, we have a group of young people who have been, this weekend you saw out there.
Was this the first time the recruit class was out on the street at Expo? I saw a group of them by the convention center, and the only way I recognized them was they weren't wearing gold. They had like a little name tag with a picture of a badge.
Right. They were there because we wanted to teach them early on how to engage community. Every one of those recruits had to spend time in the community before they were hired. They were community-oriented. They were given the opportunity to meet and spend time with the police officers to get to know them. But they're engaged in community and watching how it's done because they're the future leaders. But having said that, it takes a while to get them up to speed. It takes a year, year and a half to train them. So we don't want to end up having the expectation higher than our ability to deliver. In other words, overpromise and under-delivering, that's not something IMPD is going to do.
Let me go to Deborah, who's been waiting patiently at 239-1310. Deborah, thanks for waiting.
Hi. Hello, Amos and Chief Hite.
Hello, ma'am.
I had an issue with one of your officers. I called the police. There was a person that was trespassing and stealing on our properties, and everybody was scared to call the police. And so I did, and the lady was in my yard trying to break into my shed, and I felt like I should call the police, so I did. The police officer came. I had spoke to the same officer earlier that day when I saw her, and I gave him a description of her, and he, I guess he went in the direction that she went. So here she is again. This time she's has personal property, and she's on the back porch, and she's taking things. And so I called the police, and when he came to my property, he didn't address me. He went directly to her. When I tried to approach him and tell him what happened, what was the matter, he appeared to be very arrogant, aggressive, and hostile toward me. And I asked for his name and his badge number. He refused to give it to me. All I know is the number on his car. I don't understand the aggressiveness and the hostility from the police, especially if I was the victim. And it made me just kind of like fearful of police and how they conduct themselves, because it was not professional at all.
Well, I tell you, I'm glad to hear we can talk about what we did wrong, but I also want to make sure you understand it's not indicative of all our police officers. But what we have here is a situation where a misdemeanor not committed in his presence, and he had investigative had to investigate it based on your information. Now, we teach our officers to treat our public with dignity and respect, and we have we'll get you information offline and look into it. But I don't want you all to wait. Hear me, audience. Don't wait till the chief's on the airways to tell us about what it is we need to talk about. We have ways of contacting us, and we want to make sure we do that because we want to hear it ahead of time. And if we need to come out and do community education on what to do when stopped by police, what we can expect in terms of police services. But I will say this, to Amos's point, as we talk about, when you hear us talk about funding, when you hear us talking about streams that we return in terms of staffing, one of the things we want to make sure of is we don't want to rush our way through investigations or spending time with you. We want to take our time. But right now, we want to make sure we're not just focused on 911 calls and runs to run, going from run to run. We need to take our time, spend time with you, deal with your problem, treat you with respect. But I don't want to feel like we're in a hurry. And that's one of the discussions we're going to have about time management, right, what services we're going to deliver in the future with the resources that we're giving.
Deborah, when did this occur?
What I wanted to ask you,
yes, ma'am,
is if, I mean, me as being a victim, how am I supposed to be approached, or was I supposed to be approached, since I was the one that called the police? And mind you, this person was still on my property and mouthing off and everything. So, you know, the way I was treated, to be honest, sure, with you, I don't want to call police in the future, you know. I'd rather had take the problem into my own hands because of how I was treated by this officer, you know. And this is not the first time I've had to have speak with this officer. If I had a situation, I had to call him. It's the Southwest District. This person appears, and I always get this disrespectful, aggressive, hostile attitude from this person. Now, when I approached him, he never addressed me at all. He spoke to her.
Deborah, I have some questions I want to ask her.
But I think it's important to know, ma'am, that any time there's a complaint, now this is not disturbing me more so, because this is the second time around, and that's the first time I've heard about it. So I want to make sure that we have a mechanism that's working for the community to report that. And if not, we'll have to find a better way. But we don't want to go beyond you having one bad experience and not address that. Two or three is even more challenging for me. But I have my sergeant here. We're going to take your information offline because I have about four or five questions I really need to ask you.
All right, so Deborah,
I don't want to do it on air.
Deborah, I want you to hold on, and then Drew, the person who answered the phone when you called me, Drew is going to pick up the phone off the air and give Drew your name and a number where you can be reached during the day. Okay.
Hold on, sir.
And Drew's holding on. I know Drew got a piece of paper.
One of the things, James, real quick, we have to do, and I would like you maybe help us with this, community education as to what we do in terms of certain types of crimes, especially around misdemeanors not committed in the officer's presence, and how we address those concerns with citizens when they have challenges with police. Those two things I wish we could talk about.
When an officer rolls up, are they looking for the person who made the call, or are they looking for, if the person was abusive and yelling, are they going to go instinctively to the person that's yelling and abusive first, not necessarily the person that made the call?
That's a great question, because if you...
And that's going to be those questions your folks are going to ask.
Exactly. The point of less resistance, if you ask someone who's calm and rational explaining, and someone's a little more loud and boisterous, sometimes it's easier to get the story from the person's who being rational, as opposed to someone who may be a little louder. Now, I know in our culture there are people who talk a little loud, and they talk with their hands and things of that nature. We teach that, cultural sensitivity, when it comes down to that. But we have to get both sides of the story, and sometimes it's difficult when people are at odds with each other. And we talk about conflict resolution, diffusion skills, all that's given to the recruits when they go to the academy, and reinforce their roll call. But I really want to have a conversation about that with community, because I hear that more than often, that we're not satisfied with the outcome, and I want to be sure I fully understand what that really looks like.
Let me go to D right quick, and then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I know the, and I support our police. I think they're doing a fantastic job. I mean, they put their lives on the line all the time, and that's wonderful. We thank them. I just have a question, though. The chief was talking about how they want people to feel safe. I'm just going by my experience. I can't say what's happened to everybody. But when I see the police pulling over a young black male, usually they have two or three police cars. When if you see them pulling over a Caucasian person, you don't see that many police cars. And I'm wondering why so many police cars for young black males. That's the only time that I have seen them have two and three police cars. And then my second question is, why do our police ride in tandem? Because if you feel like you have to have two or three police officers, if there were already two in a car, they'd already be there together backing each other up. And wouldn't that save on gas if we didn't have all these police cars running around with just one officer in them?
Ah, I like the way you think, ma'am.
My question, and I'll let you respond.
Sure. Both of them are great questions. And that's part of that tactic training I want to get into. Well, we get into the first one. Pulling over cars, there are a couple of reasons. One deals with the fact that there are certain challenges in areas. We've done our homework and done our logistics and know where some of our high-risk offenders may live. There are some cars that are deliberately stopped with the idea of identifying the persons inside, and oftentimes there's contraband. So one of the things we don't do here is the East Coast version of stop and frisk. I don't believe in throwing a broad net out and hoping we catch a fish or two. We identify people in areas. We know where they live. We know where they frequent. And oftentimes, we know they're capable of carrying weapons and drugs, et cetera. So it's not uncommon for safety and unity in numbers and making sure we're safe. You may see two or three cars in terms of backing up because you're absolutely right, two-man car. Now, I come from a department back in the 80s and 70s when we rode two-man cars. And in certain areas of the city here in Indianapolis, I believe we need to have two-man cars. Now, it goes back to staffing issues and being able to respond and providing services to our citizens overall. But in safety, you're right, there are numbers. Now, the tandem cars, oftentimes we ride what we may call trains in those areas to identify people. We're going to start multiple groups of people we're looking for or cars we're going to stop. We may be doing a car stop initiative, but it also sends a message that we're no longer robbing, allow the bad guys to take over our neighborhoods. We're going to make sure community feels safe seeing police in the area because oftentimes we get that we don't see enough police. And we want to make sure that we have adequate numbers when we're facing people with assault weapons and things of that nature.
Quick, as we go to the break. You know, the SWAT guys that are out in the neighborhoods, when people hear SWAT, they're thinking of the TV show Steve Forrest coming out of the truck. They're holding the AR-14s, the heavy weapons. These SWAT guys that are out in the neighborhoods, are they coming out of the cars with the AR-14? Are they coming out to the SWAT music?
No, believe it or not, these were the same people who were police officers handling runs and doing what they had to do on a regular basis prior to being called out for SWAT duty. The reason why they're full-time is because in some of my areas, our high-risk areas, we have faced a threat. As you notice, we've had 31 police action shootings, 9 police officers shot, and 2 killed. We had 4 SWAT officers shot. So it tells you we're facing a different type of threat out there. The people in the old game, in the old days, were a little reluctant to take on the police quite the way they are. We got innocent people being shot, aimless, walking down the street today. So we have to be clear there are certain areas we have to ramp up our enforcement. So you may see them out there, but not in the typical SWAT ninja warrior outfits, but they're there with it because they bring the special weapons and tactics and skills.
Do they operate, though, with the same rules of engagement of use of force?
No, because they understand it's only based on one thing, relevancy and what they're faced with right now. And they have to be able to articulate the use of force, number one. But it has to be reasonable. It has to be a reasonable amount of force used under a reasonable statute. We have clear that there are times when, again, it's sir and ma'am until it's no longer time to be sir and ma'am.
All right, we'll be back in a few moments with Chief Rick Height of IMPD after these.
Hello, my name is Jessica Key, staff writer with the Indianapolis Recorder newspaper and Indiana Minority Business Magazine. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
And time flies when you're having fun. Let me go to Bill right quick. Bill, you're going to have about a minute and a half.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Hey, Chief, I want to tell you last couple of times I saw you on duty, you're very professional. And on the 4th of July, I saw you, spoke to you. And I know it's kind of upsetting that you and your staff have to be reduced to babysitting. I heard one guy said he wished he can babysit his granddaughter, you know, who pays for that when you have to crowd kids 20 and 40 deep, 6 and 7? I thought a couple of them like 6, 7 years old without their parents, and you put them on the bus.
Wait, where was that?
4th of July, downtown.
All right, let me ask this. Were there any curfew violations 4th of July downtown? Because obviously there was not large clubs of people at Expo.
It was about 10:30 going on 11 o'clock.
All right, let me let the chief respond.
We were very lenient in terms of making sure families were connected to children and got their rides and got them on buses. Indigo did a better job this year to this point. Sir, we self-absorb. We eat that portion of it, and we thank you for recognizing that that's our contribution to the city and making sure our children and city is safe.
And so we didn't have a lot of. Let me move on to Anonymous at 239-1310. Anonymous, you got a minute.
Hello.
Hello.
I just want to make a comment. I'm listening to all the comments and questions and everything, but this is concerning the chief of police. I was thinking earlier today with all the things that's going on in the world and in the community.
Yes, ma'am.
Police are faced with a lot. We all are going through so much. And I was thinking, why don't they, or do they even have counseling for the police? Not only the times that they need it, but at this time, we all need counseling because there's so much going on. So have they even thought about getting the police officers and dealing with the streets counseling or, you know, because with the things that they're going through and in the streets and everything they have to put up with on the streets and then going home to their own family. So have counseling even came into play with the police officers? Because a lot of them do have attitudes. I have encountered someone with very nasty attitudes, someone that didn't have attitudes. But they're going through so much at home and didn't have to deal with the street.
Mm.
Where's the counseling at?
Great question.
Well, first of all, thank you for recognizing the hard work of men and women at NPD, and it does take its toll on us. But I tell you this much. We all have coping mechanisms, and one of mine is finding a fine church or place of worship and a body of water. And I meditate and pray near that, and it helps me tremendously. But to answer your question succinctly, we have a chaplain's program. We have a volunteer chaplain program of 10 chaplains involved in that portion. We have an employee assistance program. We have clinicians on board to assist officers with that as well. We've also had an advent of a psychiatrist who does the initial screening of old police officers, and we also have a fitness for duty where a psychiatrist also comes on board and make a determination whether an officer is fit for duty. But because of the stressors of the job, responding to homicide and a lot of unfair treatment in our society by people on people, it does take its toll. We're human just like everyone else, but we try our absolute best to find people who are leaking, who need additional help, who may find themselves in need of a day off. We're trying to encourage our supervisors to catch it early, and we develop an early warning system called IA Pro, which is a data-driven process that we'll be able to capture that early rather than later. And thank you for that.
And Jennifer will be our last caller today. Jennifer, you got 1 minute.
Yes, I've had a question for the chief of police.
Yes, ma'am.
What poses the police officers to search a vehicle once they've pulled someone over?
Well, it depends on the information being received. It depends on the history of our knowledge with the person in the car. And a lot of it deals with whether or not we have a search or seizure warrant and or consent to search the vehicle. It depends on the circumstances.
Well, yesterday, my husband, he travels a lot because his job, and he's an electrician. So he was on 70 last night. It was probably 11 o'clock at night, and he's going west, coming from Ohio. And they pulled him over for his license plate light was out. And, you know, he got his driver license and registration. And I'm on the phone with him the entire time, and they never knew because he had the earbuds in his ear.
Right.
So, you know, they ask, can they search his vehicle? Nothing is on his record. He has probably like 4 points on his license, but it's nothing major. They searched his truck from top to bottom.
And this was IMPD or Indiana State Police?
No, this was IMPD.
On I-70, on the actual highway?
On the interstate, yes.
All right.
We live off of Emerson, so he was getting off of.
All right, I tell you what we want to do, because I'm running out of time. If you would hold on, and Drew is going to pick up the phone off the air. If you would give Drew your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, folks from the chief of staff will call you and find out some more information, because they've got their eyebrow raised, okay?
Okay.
All right, hold on. We'll do that. Oh, and for our listeners listening to us at PraiseIndy.com in South Carolina. See, Chief, yeah, everybody listens when they listen online. Mm-hmm, yeah. To our friends on South Carolina, somebody's on vacation. And they're relaxing and enjoying themselves on vacation. So South Carolina, Charleston, hope you're enjoying yourself in South Carolina. Chief's always good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Rick Hyde of IMPD. Thanks very much for being with us. That's it for today. We'll do it all again tomorrow.
Bless you,
same
Pastor.
Time, same station. I'm Amos Brown. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.